Welcome to episode 46 of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, coming to you live for the first time in 2018.
Woo!
From the Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans Emporium in picturesque Crown Heights, Brooklyn. I am Stephen Van Patten, and joining me tonight are
Mark Abbott
and
Taryn Lopez.
Kirk Johnson has the night off.
He will be missed.
He will be missed.
He will be missed. I am wearing a Game of Thrones t-shirt. Not his favorite clan by any means, but, you know.
There you go.
Just in honor. In honor to, mm-hmm. to the homie Kirk.
Take care, Kirk.
Okay. Lots to unpack.
Yes. Yep.
First of all, we haven't had a show for a little bit, so for all three of you that have been trying to figure out where the fuck we've been, we're a little tied up, but, you know, the holidays and all of that mess and hoopla, but here we are.
Yeah.
Yep,
back
we're here.
Again.
We got together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So real quick, I thought what would be nice if we did a quick best of 2017 roundup.
Okay.
So Mark, in all of the horror genre for 2017, who represented for you? Who made you feel good?
Wow. You know, it's interesting. It's probably a whole lot of stuff I watched on Netflix. I don't think I went to the movie theaters to see. I can't even think of a horror film that I saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
There you go.
Thank you. I don't know why.
That's the one horror movie I got to see.
I don't know why that didn't jump into my head right away, but it I would have to.
I don't know if you thought it was the best.
It feels
but I really
like a long
it.
Time ago.
No, it does.
It does feel
it
like does, a long
it feels
time ago.
Like it's, long time it's been a while.
But I'd definitely say it was a good contender for 2017.
No,
best horror movie.
It was. Mm-hmm. I really don't think we saw anything else.
I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of many horror films.
I want to say one of the Annabelle.
I didn't
spooky
see.
Spooky ass doll
or
things
like,
might
yeah.
have been released around that
yeah.
time.
Or like the Insidious.
Yes.
There was a third Insidious movie that came out.
There was a third Insidious.
Which I didn't get to see, unfortunately.
There was another Saw film that came out over the Halloween.
Yeah, there
called
was.
Jigsaw.
There was.
Oh, right, Jigsaw. Yes, I did not get to see that though.
There was another Annabelle, which I did not see. But I will say this. There was something that was Steven. Requested I see.
Oh. Ah, yes,
and
yes, yes.
It's
yes.
not a film from last year, but it was called Pet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
About this guy who works in he's a coroner. He works in a morgue. And he has this infatuation with this young lady to which he drugs her and puts her in a cage. He works in an animal hospital. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out through him trapping her that this girl isn't as pure as he thought she was. Because he had it in his head that she was this wonderful girl. And the whole time she's having these conversations with him, it turns out that she's murdered someone.
Oh.
And she's talking to the person who she murdered, who's sitting outside the cage, trying to convince her to try to get away from this guy.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It was probably the best recommendation, but it was, yeah, for horror.
Pet, okay. Is this on Netflix?
No, I actually saw it on Showtime.
You said everything you watched was on Netflix.
I thought it was on Netflix.
I will find it on Showtime.
But yeah, just definitely check that one out. Taryn?
Well, like I said, the best horror movie for me was definitely it.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to that movie for years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that, but I was looking forward to that remake for many years. And they did it justice. They did a pretty good job. And I know that we talked about it before, so I'm not going to get really into it. And it had its problems. All movies do. But I thought it was a really good adaptation of the book. And I really look forward to part two.
Part two.
Coming this year, hopefully. I think
this year
I don't know if
2019.
I don't know if it's this year or next year, but whenever it comes,
I want to say it's going to be.
I think
2019.
They start shooting
probably
this year.
Yeah, probably 2019. Probably.
I want to say a lot of the bigger stuff is going to be held back because The studios are going to wait for Infinity Wars to get the fuck out of
You know what? That's probably the smartest thing they can do, because that's going to be a monster.
And everybody's going to lose money. You know.
There's going to be like nothing else in the theaters except for, it's going to be Infinity War and like seven screens.
First show, 9:15 a.m. at the Alamo Draft.
Ain't nobody going against that shit.
7 a.m.
DC, you want to put up a movie against it? Want to try
this
year?
They better not. They better not. Crazy.
What about you, Steven?
Oh, horror. Definitely it was a standout.
Cool.
You know, I think my only issue with it was... And, you know, I kind of held it up against the TV version. And the kids, you know, and I get that, you know, the TV version, they said it in the 50s and these kids, they said in the 80s and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, those kids, for whatever reason, I cared about them a little more.
The 50s?
Yeah, the 50s kids. I kind of cared about them a little more. It was, it's like, it was character development.
Right. It was a miniseries. So they had time over,
they had a little more time to
build on that. Yeah.
They had a little more time.
And plus they mixed and matched the future and the past more in the original series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there was a little bit of a play interplay there. So I don't know. I felt like we got to know the kids a little bit longer than this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
But yeah.
And I know in previous episodes of BWS, we talked about like how you would recast,
right?
Yeah,
the movies.
Yeah,
you know, because like John Ritter, Tim Reed, like people who were big at the time, especially TV wise, they were the folks that were, you know.
Well, and you know, it's interesting when you mention that. I remember when the show came out, when the miniseries was airing, and I was like, John Ritter. like for me, it was like a Jack Tripper, as a,
you know, after he was playing, it made sense.
You know, what's his name from wasn't the judge from Night Court?
No, what was he?
Yes. Harry.
Yeah, he was the comedian. He was the one that told the jokes.
Oh my God, you're right. That was him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm stuck on Harry Connick Jr. because I worked on
that. But I totally forgot Harry, that was him when he was younger. That's funny.
We'd have to look his name up.
Well, actually, the DVD's right over here.
That's funny.
Okay. But yeah, it was like that. It was like when you looked at that cast, I was sort of like, because I was such a huge fan of the book.
Yeah. Right.
And so I don't.
It wasn't who you
Well,
imagined.
You know what? I don't think I've ever read books and casted in my head.
Right. Oh, I do that shit all the time.
It's how I got through Harry Potter.
See, I don't cast characters, but I visualize them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they eventually come out with a cast, I'll be like, okay, that person looks pretty close
kind
to what
of,
I thought.
Kind of what I thought he would
you
look
know, like. In Game of Thrones, I did that. And then when the show came out, I was like, oh shit, some of these people are just not what I was thinking.
Just not, yeah.
But yeah, I hear you about that. Mm-hmm. Like that you already have an idea in your head and seeing it come into play. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say otherwise, not horror, but just for 2017, I really enjoy Thor Ragnarok. I might say that that's maybe my favorite superhero movie of the year, just because it was just so much fun and just so, like, unexpectedly fun, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. I didn't expect it to be, like, a Guardians of the Galaxy kind of a feel to it, but it definitely had that edge.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to see Thor finally in a movie that I'm like, oh, look, you're actually in an Avengers caliber kind of a movie, because all the movies beforehand were kind of like, this is kind of good, but it's not great. I'm not really feeling like you're one of the Avengers, really.
Right.
But this one was finally like, okay, I can see you up there with Iron Man, finally. Like, this is a good movie. So I like it. Thor Ragnarok.
Definitely.
My vote.
Yeah.
As far as superhero, I mean,
yeah.
Spider-Man Homecoming, of course.
Yes.
Very strong.
Very strong.
I was so happy with Michael Keaton.
Absolutely.
Sorry, it took me a minute. I was like, what? Michael Keaton, Vulture, right?
Vulture. He played... That was a very sinister character he played.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially... I think one of my favorite scenes is that scene in the car. When they take him to the homecoming
dance.
He's
like, hey, baby, go inside. I gotta talk to Peter for a second.
And he, like, leans over with the gun in his hand.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, wow, this is... Just that moment where it's like, she doesn't need to know who you are. Nope. and you don't need to tell her who I am.
It was nice because he almost respected him in a moment. It was kind of like, you know, we're going to talk like two men. You know who I am. I know who you are. Let's just talk. It's good. Mm-hmm. You're dating my daughter. It's all right. We're cool.
Yeah. But if I, but if I see you, you know, it's...
If you fuck with my business.
If I see you in these streets. Omar's coming.
Seriously. He goes, Omar, real quick.
Yeah. That was...
That was a really good... that was a good...
No, it was very strong. Yeah. But you're right. Thor Ragnarok. Because my thing is... Thor is the harder sell of all the big characters.
He's a god.
Right.
How do you sell off a god? You know?
That is definitely the hardest sell. And yeah. I mean, you know, when I saw the first Thor movie, you know, I'm just kind of sitting through it. There were parts of it that were enjoyable.
Yeah.
Loki is definitely, he
stole the movie.
Basically.
Oh. He stole the franchise, honestly. He stole the franchise.
Right. You know, and it's so funny because we were talking about something before we started this, and it's just funny because you were talking about how a lot of times people get cast in superhero movies because they look good, not necessarily because they can act.
Right.
Dude can act.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Hiddleston
And it turns out he's like Shakespearean trained and that whole business and all that. So, you know, it just comes into play. But, you know, you're watching the first Thor movie, and it's basically a fish out of water plot, you know.
Yeah.
And you're looking at Asgard, and you're like, wow, I wonder what a one-bedroom goes for in there, you know, and all of that. And it looks great and the whole thing, but, you know, you don't really start taking Thor seriously until, at least I didn't, until the Avengers movie, the first Avengers movie.
Right.
Where he's, like, really laying it down, and you're like, oh, okay.
It's like, oh, you're actually a contender here. Okay, right.
Right. I forgot about you being able to at least take a punch from the Hulk.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. Right.
So, you know, it's like the fact that they got to the point with Ragnarok, and they did what they did, and it's like the timing. See, this is the funny thing about Marvel now, is that they've mastered the tongue-in-cheek side of the superhero movie.
Yes, they really have.
So it's, you know, and I'm gonna bring this up again when we start talking about Last Jedi, but the whole balance of humor, oh shit, take this seriously, okay, this is funny, you know, that whole thing, the pacing, they've got that down to a science.
Yes, they do.
And also, just, you know, Marvel in general, they know when to be serious, when to not be serious, and they just make it work. And of course, by now, with all the movies that have come out of that studio, you could just attribute a lot of that to practice.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really says something to the fact that we're sitting there watching Thor Ragnarok, and the Hulk is talking, and we're taking it seriously, we're taking it in. And no complaints.
No complaints.
I think for me, one of my greatest lines of the year has to be the last line that Aunt May says when she walks in and he's in the Spider-Man. She's like, what the fuck? And it just cuts. Because I'm like, that. I think that is actually the reaction that a parent would have.
Parent.
And just like the whole, because even when he first comes in and his buddy's sitting there and he's like,
he's on the Spider-Man.
And it's like, almost like he's mad that you didn't tell me that you were the Spider-Man. You know?
Well, for the record, I would be mad if you didn't tell me you were Spider-Man. Right.
Honestly, at this point, yes, I'd be mad.
I'd be upset.
Let's give an honorable mention
to
the only movie that I guess I just enjoyed, because it was just enjoyable. Justice League.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was just a lot of... It was fun.
I will see it at some point, and I'm sure it is fun.
I look forward to seeing Aquaman and Wonder Woman. I look forward to the two of them.
I've heard they were very good.
Yes.
Look, let's talk about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the bigger online controversies, if you want to call it a controversy, it is the general vitriol that DC movies get sometimes.
Right.
Here's my thing about the Justice League movie. Now, you can say whatever you want about Batman versus Superman. You can say what you want about Ben Affleck. You can say there's a whole lot of things that you could pinpoint and say, ah, that's kind of weak. Why did they do this and all of that? But, and here's the thing I say to a lot of people. Okay, so because, you know, you'll get in these conversations and there's all these problems and issues and this and that. Like, wait, time out. You like the Avengers movie, right? And they go, yeah, of course, the Avengers movie, go, da-da-da-da. You do realize it's basically the same movie. And it's like, huh, no, man. Like, yes. It's like, no, mm-hmm. But that story is, no. Understand. Mm. It's a group of superheroes brought together by a manipulative guy in all black.
Uh-huh.
And then they fight some massive thing from outer space.
Mm-hmm.
How is that not the same fucking movie?
Character development, story, plot, editing.
I'm not editing. Right. I'm not saying that they executed.
Right.
That's the really difference. Like you're right. Story wise, it's the exact same thing. You can't really go wrong with the story.
The argument is the execution.
So my thing is, you can only hate it but so much.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think really is the argument. I think it's the execution. Because I mean, if we look at the Dark Knight series,
mm-hmm.
the Christian Bale mm-hmm. Batman,
mm-hmm.
you look at Wonder Woman, you know, I mean, for the exception of that last Batman film, the series was the first two were really, really strong origin stories.
But mm-hmm. that one was okay.
It
was an okay franchise.
But then when we got to Batman versus Superman, I think the ideology was, you know who this is. You've been here before. We don't need to really hold your hand and walk you through this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like, here's the movie. Knock yourself out. As opposed to people, and I understand that complaint where it's like, we just didn't get the kind of development, this, that, the other thing. But I think it's at a point now where it's like, we don't really need to develop these cats because you should know who this is already.
I mean,
I think
yes, and
I
know,
but I think what's going to happen, and I think what happened with Wonder Woman, and I think that's where they turned the corner, because for whatever reason DC didn't get it in their head that we should do separate origin stories before grouping everything together. It's like we're gonna group everything together. They will go back and do the origin stories.
That's because they're playing catch up.
Yeah, they're playing catch up. Yeah. And I also think it's not a statute of limitations. I forget what it's called, a licensing thing. Because I think that Justice League movie has been years in planning.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it fell victim to the writer's strike. With the Writers Guild about 10 years back,
mm-hmm.
it fell into all of these problems. Because I remember originally that Justice League movie Common was supposed to be playing Lantern,
Green Lantern, yeah,
and everything just kind of fell apart. And I guess, like you said, you know, it's almost like the Android versus the iPhone. Mm. We got there first. We just didn't execute it properly. And everybody was like, we saw what you did. We just took our time and developed it this way. And so that's why you kind of have this, you know, imbalance of the two. Because you're right. They are,
Soul of it is the same.
Civil War and Batman versus Superman is pretty much the same story.
Mm.
It is.
I didn't even think of that, but true.
If you think about the death of his family... Somebody murdered his father.
I don't think Civil War and Batman vs. Superman is the same movie.
The concept.
Civil War is about the fact about showing who you are to the government and whatnot.
What was the main villain in Civil War?
Bigger message
was
in Civil War.
Was a robot that somebody created because they thought that it was going to be for the greater good of humanity.
No. The guy who kills... No. You're thinking of...
You're thinking Age of Ultron.
Oh, my bad.
Civil War. No. This.
Sorry.
Civil War.
Sorry. You're right.
The whole thing with Tony Stark's family.
Just means this shit.
Where the guy, where what's his name, murders his parents.
Yes.
And it's when they.
Gotcha. To be fair, honestly,
it's okay.
All the Captain America movies basically are they basically are Avenger movies. Yeah. Captain America movies are Avenger movies, so mm-hmm. I get the two of them completely confused. So Ultron and Winter mm-hmm. Soldier and all that get confused in my mind. So yes,
no, but sorry, you're right. It was yes. pretty much the same kind of yeah. storyline. It's like Dread
yeah.
mm-hmm. and the Raid.
Mm. Wow, I never thought of that. That's
you've never seen the Raid? Oh, you have to see this. Mm. Basically, the Raid story is about a group of police that go to take down this drug lord in a building.
Oh my
the
god.
The drug lord shuts the building down and basically tells everyone in the building to kill the cops.
That's okay, I've seen Dread.
And it's really like when I saw the Raid, I was like, well, you know, it's a martial arts film. So oh, they okay. go just completely off the deep cool. end with the Raid. It's excellent. And then there's also, but within that story, there's something else going on within that. It's not yeah. just simply just them killing the cop. They have a mole in there somewhere that they didn't know about.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That changes the dynamic of the story. But it was pretty much like after I saw the Raid and I was dying to see Dread, and I'm watching Dread and I'm like, wait a minute, yeah, I've seen this before. Like and it's pretty much literally when mother says, you know, we got a judge.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need him killed and I'm going to need you guys. And I'm like, wow, this is the same. And unfortunately, that's what happened. The Raid came out before Dread. And Dread.
I'm glad I saw Dread then.
But you like them both for different reasons.
Oh, I'm sure.
You love them
both. The Raid is hot.
Yes.
I'm glad I gave my money to Dread, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm glad I gave my money to that movie because I would like that franchise to continue.
I would too.
But let's not get bogged down in the DC versus Marvel thing.
Yeah, let's not do that.
We've already had that like a few times, so let's not get bogged down that one.
Good idea. Sci-fi. 2017. Well, I guess we can agree that the biggest thing, was two big things. There was Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, oh my God, why am I blanking? We did a whole show on the aliens.
We're not talking about that. Alien is not the highest thing of 2017. Let's talk about Blade Runner.
Well, it's not, but it was a significant thing. But all right, yeah, fine. We can leave it alone.
I mean, if you think Alien Covenant was one of the highlights of sci-fi of 2017, that's all good. But
I'm saying
I am not going to be on that. I'm saying it was
I know you were upset. Yes.
If I see Ridley Scott in the street, I might have words.
Whoa! You might have to hold me back from Ridley Scott in the street. That's all I gotta say.
These hands.
They're gonna be like,
you don't know.
No, Ridley, terrorists coming, yo.
Ridley needs to watch out. Okay, I got some words for him.
And you can probably take him because he's like what 89 or something. 90.
I mean, he'll get me arrested, but that's right.
Well,
I just need him to hear my piece.
Blade Runner was. Yes. Here's the thing about Blade Runner, it was long.
Woo!
Just like that the original.
I
gotta tell you, I am so glad I saw that at home.
We saw that in IMAX.
You saw the original. You needed to understand it was gonna be like a 3-hour, maybe plus movie.
You know what? The very first time I actually saw Blade Runner, because mm-hmm. I had never seen it, I saw it in a special re-release without the narration.
Good, because the narration sucks.
I'd never seen the one with the narration.
Interesting.
So it was the director's cut. It was a special edition showing, and I saw it at Lincoln Center.
Cool. Mm.
And
you're saying it worked better without the narration.
What I saw, because Vangelis' music put me to sleep four times through that film.
Oh,
just
God.
Broke my heart a little.
And it, no, oh, it God. Was, when I finally, and then I saw it again at the Film Forum.
I've never seen it without the narration. That's
really?
No, really, yeah.
I saw it at the Film Forum, again without the narration, with a large cup of coffee. Because for whatever reason, that soundtrack lulls me to sleep. It's not the film.
You know, I'm not gonna blame you. It's a very soothing soundtrack.
So don't go to see Blade Runner tired.
It is a very soothing soundtrack. And it's 3 hours long, so yeah.
And it's So
it's got like fucking sexy saxophones in it and shit.
But
scuba doo blah.
A little bit. Wow, like when the sex scene comes up, the corner goes up.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Yeah. Who wants to try the Apothic Dark?
I'm not trying.
So, but I really enjoyed about the new Blade Runner. Was the simple fact.
You're still.
Was the simple fact that if you've never seen the original Blade Runner, you didn't have to.
That's cool.
It could be its own film.
Right, right.
And would probably make you go back and watch the original.
It would, because so it's that like you could get lead the with Easter eggs.
So that you can get the answers to some of the questions.
My only question. Were there certain things that if you had watched the original Blade Runner, that you watching this one, you go, aha.
Yeah.
Were there those moments?
There were a couple of moments where they had a couple of those aha
That's
moments.
Cool.
But what it does do, it answers that conspiracy theory that everybody's
had.
Were
there knives of replicant?
Yes.
I don't even want to know. I'm mad that he even answered it.
But they answer it in its own subtle way.
Okay.
But not it's not like bam.
It's over
like,
the head.
No. But you
okay,
but
that's cool.
But it was one of my visually it was stunning.
I'm sure.
I'll
give that to Ridley Scott.
The Vegas
visually,
stuff.
He's amazing.
Yeah, all the Vegas stuff.
Whoa.
In the desert was amazing.
Whoa, that was.
It was amazing.
Visually,
was
Ridley Scott is fucking amazing.
That
yes,
was hot.
I give him props for that.
I think he's a little bit too full of himself. But I think visually you are still a genius. I still love everything you do. I just have some questions for them.
Well, you clearly don't love everything because...
I still love him for creating the alien. He will always be in my heart for making Alien Part 1.
Okay.
There we go.
James Cameron is also in my heart for Alien Part 2.
Yeah.
But Ridley Scott will always be in my heart for Alien 1, but I will always kind of hate him a little bit for Covenant.
Okay.
Well, you know what? She is to Covenant what I am to Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
Okay.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know you hated it that much. Really?
Oh, he.
You
really
don't.
Hates
no,
that.
You don't understand
he really
because
hates that.
I am like a Hitchcock fanatic, and I consider the original Psycho off limits.
Yeah.
To remake.
Yeah. As it well
like,
should be.
And
as it should be.
And my thing was the fact that you decided to take the film and remake it
shot by shot. Yes.
I'm like,
yes.
So then what did you remake
it for?
What
was the whole point of the movie?
And then adding certain things to it that I felt just
did nothing
to help the film. which took away the suspense and the terror
I'm
of
glad
the original.
You feel the same way.
No, I always said to people, I'm like, I better not run into him in the street because I was really upset. And I didn't go to the theater to see it. Somebody convinced
me
to watch it.
I downloaded it, thankfully.
And I watched it and I was like, I should have never watched this. Yeah. And even the A&E series, Bates Motel, which was going fine until I got a call from Beef Wine and Shenanigans co-host who told me to watch Rihanna playing the role of Janet Leigh.
I could feel the outrage coming through the cell phone.
Why would you do that?
He just told me this text message. And he goes, have you watched the recent episode of Bates Motel? I said, I fell behind a little bit. Why? He goes, Rihanna's in it this season. And I said, I heard that. And he goes, did you hear who character she's playing? And I was like, no. And he goes, well, let me just put it this way. She works in a bank. She takes some money. She takes a long drive. She takes a shower. And I think there was like that 5 second, but like when on your phone, when you see the dots kind of just going back and forth,
yeah,
with me not knowing exactly how to respond to this, and I just responded with the Darth Vader, no, and then I had to.
Now I'm curious about this episode, honestly.
And actually, what the two episodes do is completely destroy the original story arc of Hitchcock's Psycho. So
really destroy
at that point.
Like practically prison raping.
So yes, you're right. This is you are to this franchise as I am to Covenant. This works out perfectly. Oh,
no.
I'm sorry that you had to go through this.
Everybody's got one.
Everybody's got one. Yeah, that's true. Everybody's got one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You guys have those things. Yeah. I have Dark Shadows.
We're all traumatized somehow.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Dark Shadows.
Fucking Tim Burton, yeah.
I'm sorry. I never saw the movie, but for good reason. I knew exactly why it was going to be bad.
I'm sorry. Yeah, dude. And I'm not even saying, I'm not even going to come out and say, like, yeah, I'd assault Tim Burton or something like that. Because he'd probably bite me or something and I need a tetanus shot. He probably would, actually. Fuck. But tetanus. I'm what he did to Dark Shadows is borderline criminal. It really is. Like if I could, I would testify in court.
So you understand me.
Okay. I understand you perfectly.
Okay, you understand me, sir.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, the thing with Alien Covenant, I did not think it was the greatest sci-fi movie of 2017, but I considered it a significant event because it was Ridley Scott returning to the franchise.
Fair enough.
But these motherfuckers lost me the second they went down to a planet dressed like they were going to Banana Republic. They lost me. It's like any other movie in this franchise, y'all are suited up, you know, helmets, you know, suits, oxygen tanks, the whole thing.
Actual science.
These motherfuckers come walking out like, oh, this is pretty.
There's green. Nice. Things must be okay.
And granted, if people don't start getting fucked up, then the movie doesn't move.
Right.
But come
on. At least let them be smart. Exactly. At least let them be a little bit smart so that when things get fucked up, it's like, oh, okay, they couldn't help it because they didn't know better.
Exactly.
If you make it like, oh, this motherfucker took off his helmet in an atmosphere that we don't know is safe, then I'm not going to be feeling very sorry for him when he gets destroyed and becomes a mutant monster because he kind of asked for it. That's just stupid. You should, you know, test the atmosphere, figure out what's happening, and then make a stupid mistake. But, you know. Give us the benefit of the doubt that we're not going to make these stupid errors.
I'll take it one step further than that. to be selected to go into outer space, you have to exhibit some fucking kind of intelligence. Okay? The three of us, fairly smart.
Fairly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not going into space.
No.
No.
Even though if we did, we'd be like, yo, motherfucker, where's my suit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still pretty sure we would have at least asked that question. Yeah,
like, where's my suit? Well, then I'm not getting off the ship.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anybody that goes out there, I may fairly shoot you when you come back. Mm-hmm.
Fairly mm-hmm. intelligent. Yeah.
You know, it's like that's just how it's fucking. It's Listen, a foreign planet.
I will say one thing to come out of that movie that I really hope actually happens. I want there to be an art book of David's anatomical drawings. Oh, like, the scene where you see his house, where you see all those drawings and everything mm-hmm. that he's done, mm-hmm. that is literally the scene where I'm just like, oh my god, just pause it. Just mute David. I don't give a shit what he's saying. Just let me see what he's drawn. Let me see all the things that have come out of it. If you just give me an art book of Alien Covenant, Ridley Scott, I'd be very happy. Just give me that and I will... We're cool.
We are
cool, okay?
I'm betting that's a DVD extra.
I really want to be a book, but I'm cool with a DVD extra, but I want to be a physical book of his drawings, because, I mean, he kind of made it sound like he had a lot of them, and I'm guessing you guys got an artist to do quite a few of those sketches. Mm-hmm. Put out just a little book of them, because, I mean, that will sell. Those were beautiful drawings, and I am not the only person who is a Giger fan, and, yeah, we would totally buy it. Yeah. Put out that book, please. That was mm-hmm. the best part of the movie. Gave me some marketing info.
Okay. Unless it's like, how much was that damn Aliens book that we saw at Comic-Con that year? Oh my god,
I wish you'd have seen that book. Did I show you that book at Comic-Con?
You might have. You sent me a few pictures.
That hardcover book?
Yes, you did.
The tabletop.
Yeah, with
And they had the
It was
actual,
like $100, right?
It was more than that.
No, $100. We'd have both walked out.
We'd have walked out of that with that. I think it was like
wasn't that $700?
Yeah. Because the cover. Plus they had inside the book, it was an actual x-ray of the creature inside somebody's body, because much of the money was going toward that sleeve, protective sleeve, and I was what if I don't want the sleeve? And the woman looked at me like I was crazy. She was like, "Well, that makes up the book, but I don't need all of that.
Right?
I just want to read the doggone book.
Right?
How much is the book without the sleeve? We're not selling it without the sleeve.
Nope.
Well, then I guess you're not selling a book, because I'm not paying $700.
He did bring me over so I could be tortured by it, too. I was like, well, wait, how much?
Misery loves company.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. All right, anyway, that's best of 2017.
Best of 2017.
We'll rehash when Kirk's joining us, I suppose. Yeah. All right, so another thing that occurred in between the times that we've been together is the release of a little independent little thing involving Jedis and guys in robes and a rebellion and The Last Jedi.
Oh, that little film. Oh,
yes, the indie classic.
Three times. So far.
Damn. So, he's not in it. Unfortunately. So, I'm not even going to talk about how I feel about the film myself.
No?
No, well, I mean, eventually we'll get there. But I'm confused as to how a movie can make so much money, but people are still on the internet calling it a failure. How does that happen, Mark? Can you explain? How, Sway? How?
Expectations.
But what are they expecting?
People walk into all of these films with a level of expectation about the script, about the characters. A lot of people walk into these things with what they feel the film should be, how the story should go, and what they feel is correct.
And eight took one film class.
And
if even.
And the problem is, we forget that this is a small story that's part of a bigger picture.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it is
a bigger picture that I'm going to say right now has never fully been in focus.
No, it hasn't. And this film, I mean, this film really does do that. Mm-hmm. It really kind of shows itself as we're still not there yet.
Right.
We still have a lot more to go.
Yeah.
What I do like about this, what I did love about this film, is that we walk away from this closing the chapter on the big three. Luke, Leia, Han.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, yeah.
To kind of pave the way for where I think this story needed to go from episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a departure. And I know we had already talked about this a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Kirk and I had gotten into a lot of heated debates about the fact that I felt that these films should never have included those three to begin with. Because there's too much history, both with the films and with the books, and with the ideology that we're going in, we're literally taking this in a different direction. But we first have to clean the slate of everything else. My thing with this was that it felt way too much like Empire and Return thrown into a blender with bits and pieces of, like you said, Rogue One.
Yeah.
And maybe some little filters of the New Hope. And it just felt like what I was watching was a kind of a Xerox copy of what I've already seen before.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we wanted to turn a corner by doing something different. And it's kind of hard to do that when you're attached to, you're asking the old school cats to look at this with a different set of eyes. And there's way too much information. That's the problem.
Mm.
I know that the ideology was like, we're not going to follow the books. We're not going to follow all of that. We want to try to create sort of like a new canon.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But in doing so, you still have to acknowledge the old stuff.
Right.
And if you're going to do that, then you have to be very careful about which corner we're going to turn. when Leia, when that whole situation with Leia happened, with her using the Force in space and everything.
Her flying through space, everyone.
that literally took me out of the story. Because...
I understand.
Because it's not something... Because as we have all grown up to understand how the Force works, that was not one of the components that's not even touched on.
Well,
I mean, it kind of is at times, but...
I feel like... And I could be completely off base here, but I feel like... When it comes to the Force and everybody's individual use of the Force throughout the franchise, everybody has had their little extra thing that they could do. like Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan, because of the Force, is apparently really good at sneaking around. If you think about...
He is a sneaky motherfucker.
If you think about him in all of the movies,
that's true.
Like, he's that dude that he's like... Hey, you gonna eat that? What? You know, it's like, fuck you come from? You know, it's like, dude, I'm gonna put a bell around your neck. You know, like that kind of shit. Darth Vader was just pure power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. he was like fucking, like a Reggie Jackson, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Going old school baseball reference there. Mm-hmm. But he was like pure power. And the only way that Emperor could control him was to put him in a suit so that if he acted up, he could just zap him real quick, and now you can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you look through the rest, it's like Mace Windu, another power player, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Leia floating through space, they never... First of all, it's like they never established that Leia even did anything with the Force.
Not true.
Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back.
She's the AT&T of Jedis.
If you mean actual Jedi power, then fine. But yes, she did
I'm not saying that she didn't have any Force.
She never exhibited the Force the way...
Manipulating the Force herself. I completely agree with you. But she did exhibit Force sensitivity.
Sensitivity.
That's all I wanted to say.
No.
But yeah, she herself never manipulated the Force as far as we saw.
Right.
That was completely right. Yes.
Right. And then after that... The hills are alive!
And that's just space. And I completely agree with that.
In fucking space.
I completely agree with that.
And you're right. That does kind of take you out of your head for a second. Because first of all...
For a hot second, yes.
First of all, when that happens, considering that poor Carrie Fisher is no longer with us, mm-hmm. you're thinking, oh, that's the out.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
You're thinking, okay, so we're going to put this to bed and that's that. And I'm sure they call themselves being slick and they'll be like, yeah, they think we getting ready to get rid of Carrie right now. Little do these motherfuckers know. And then, here we go.
that was interesting.
And then, not only just floats through a nice little bit of outer space, then just lands back on the spaceship.
And like, knock, knock.
And then, you know, brush his shoulders off. You know, mm-hmm. like fucking Jay or some shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what was that? Mm-hmm. But I mean that and
well, I mean this movie truly did use the in my opinion in looking back at it, because you've seen it multiple times.
Yes.
But in thinking back to what I witnessed,
mm-hmm.
it seemed to be basically a film that's basically showing you the different variations of how the Force can be used and that it's not tied to one thing.
Yes.
Because the one thing that I did walk away and say, I'm like, well, somewhere along the line, somebody must not have read the manual for this thing.
Oh,
because it seems this is the third time I've witnessed a Sith Lord not feel the fact that his apprentice is about to do something.
No, but
to
he
him.
Did.
Well, he was.
But he did.
But he didn't realize that's what.
He didn't realize that he was being manipulated.
And my thing and my only issue with that was that, but how long has he been under your tutelage that he could figure out how to do that? Because
hubris. But do you understand that that's hubris? That is a Sith Lord saying, I have such power over this people, I don't even have to worry about that. He can't possibly do anything to betray me.
But is this the same hubris that allows Palpatine to rise in the three prequels in the first place?
Yes, I mean, it's the same hubris that has him has Snoke telling this whole script to friggin' Rey. While she's seen this, she knows exactly what's going to happen from her Force vision of the future. She knows what's going to happen. So does friggin' Kylo Ren. But then Snoke, in his hubris, is like, oh, you've seen something? Oh, I bet you've seen something. Guess what? I've seen something too. I know exactly what's going to happen. And his hubris blinds him to the fact that his apprentice is going to literally do exactly what he's saying, but do it to him instead. Mm-hmm. Like, in that one, like, the one thing I really liked about this movie was that it was so smart in that nothing was beaten over the head with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of Force power, there's a throwaway line that Kylo Ren says early on when him and Rey first start having the visions, where he goes, are you doing this? No, you can't be doing this. This would kill you. That one throwaway line literally tells you how powerful Luke Skywalker is in the last scene where he suddenly shows up and has a fucking... he has a lightsaber battle with Kylo Ren as a Force vision. That shows you how powerful it is. He couldn't even conceive of Rey doing this, even to talk. But to have a Force battle, just think of how strong Luke Skywalker must be. Also, on top of that, when Snoke died, the moment Snoke died, he was actually holding Rey up in front of Kylo Ren for him to strike her down. The moment he dies, Rey falls to the ground. So the moment he died, that power went away. Mm. The moment Luke Skywalker dies, his power doesn't go away. Guess what? You know what happens after he dies? Kylo Ren walks into that fucking into the base and finds those dice. Mm-hmm. Those dice that he gave to Leia.
That was all a Force vision.
Mm-hmm. Luke has died. The moment that Luke dies, you see Leia and Rey both turn because they feel it through the Force.
Right.
That happens before Kylo Ren even walks into the friggin' building. Mm-hmm. Then he picks up those Force vision dice. That means Luke Skywalker's power is so strong, it existed past his death. Mm-hmm. Something that Snoke never even did. But, like, the movie does all these subtle little hints to show you how powerful people are. And, like, just how the Force is, like, just not, like, a power. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that, like, if you're in tune with it, it's just this thing. It's, like, it's almost like a life force. I don't know. It's just a very smart movie.
We don't know enough about Snoke.
Do you need to know more?
Well... Yeah.
He does kind of feel like it was a placeholder.
I kind of feel like...
What do you need to know about him?
Because there's a... Palpatine...
Well, Zodiac sign, hold first on. Of all. But,
you know. Palpatine to manipulate Anakin. Mm. Had to knew enough about Anakin and knew enough about him personally.
Yeah.
For Kylo to run to Snoke... Well, first of all, we don't know who went to
who. You know what? I will agree with that.
We don't know if he went to Snoke or Snoke found him.
I wish in the flashbacks that we saw, we would have seen some of this. And I kind of
would have liked to know that a little bit better.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because of Snoke's arrogance.
Yes, I agree.
Because the thing is, in what Kylo does to Snoke has to mean... Well, one of the things is this. He has to have that, not only just his arrogance, but he has to have that much in himself to know that Kylo is not strong enough to even attempt this. Right. Because the whole thing is that the Jedi kind of taught the younglings, you know, this is why we work as a cohesive, why you only have one master and one apprentice.
Yeah.
Because of what happened with the Sith. Palpatine explains, you know, and that was the thing. Palpatine apparently did not kill his master while he was awake. He killed him in his sleep.
Yeah.
Which meant he had to know, if I try to do anything to him while he's conscious,
yes,
he will sense that. It almost feels like Kylo found Snoke and was like, finish my, because it's almost, there's this moment where I kind of feel like Snoke is getting sick of him Especially when he's like, you know, take that stupid mask off. You know, why are you even wearing that thing?
Yeah.
You know, almost like a like an annoyed father to a child. And I never get the sense that Kylo is like, I got to kill this dude because he's like with Anakin. You never get the sense that Kylo's like, I got to kill this dude because he's standing in my way of being the most powerful Jedi. His whole thing was, I got to kill Luke. For some inane reason, he had this whole thing.
Right.
What I will say, and I love this, if you're not watching carefully, because the question I had was, what happened to the other Jedi?
Oh, yeah. We know the answer to that.
The little boy who walks out of the thing and force grabs the broom. And I swear to you, you didn't notice that?
No, I noticed that. I remember.
You saw it three times.
No, because... I was wondering because I was wondering what happened to the rest of them.
That wasn't him.
Well, Luke. Him. What Luke says is Kylo took
them.
Took them.
Yeah. Guess where they are.
But where? Dead.
The Knights of Ren. We haven't seen the Knights of Ren yet.
That's if they're going there,
dude.
You forget they're not going canon.
I will. No. I'm not talking about canon. I'm talking about in movie in Force Awakens. We know that Kylo Ren, and we see in a flashback. Kylo Ren is standing with the Knights of Ren.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
We know the Knights of Ren exist because Snoke, in this movie, talks about Kylo Ren, the leader of the Knights of Ren. We have never seen the Knights of Ren in play. The Knights of Ren are the stolen students of Luke Skywalker. I guarantee you. Hmm. It will not be that...
He said he took some of them.
Yeah.
And he killed
the others. And he killed the rest. That, I'm guessing the Knights of Ren are the ones that he stole from Luke Skywalker. I will bet money on this. Oh. I am not sure because I am not... In those rooms, I am not writing the stories, but I will bet good money that the people that he stole are the Knights of Ren, not that little boy that was stolen.
Have a feeling that child is one of those.
I don't think so, but maybe. I think that was just supposed to show us that the Force is just, it's literally in everybody. Like, the whole thing with Rey and her parents, it was literally to tell us, it doesn't fucking matter who her parents are. All those people, including me, who was talking about, oh, she's a Kenobi, oh, she's a Solo, it doesn't fucking matter because the Force is not married to these three families.
But the Force
exists with everybody.
I've always considered
she's a Kenobi.
Ooh, my theory was that she was a Kenobi.
Wait a minute.
But you know what? It doesn't matter anymore because it doesn't. That's the thing. It doesn't belong to those three families. It belongs to everyone. You can be a slave and have the Force to an enormous degree.
But
you can be a high level person and have the Force. It doesn't matter.
It's very much like Harry Potter. Anybody could be a witch or a warlock.
Yes.
It doesn't matter because even like Hermione's parents are.
But before now, you couldn't be. It was like, if you were a Jedi, if you were a powerful Jedi, oh, you must be related to a Skywalker. It was just automatically known. You have to be related to one of these three families. Now, finally,
No, you don't.
Fuck those three families. You don't need to be related to any of them.
Let's put it this way.
But they are legends.
Between, until somebody decides to tell this story, we don't know what happened between episode 3. And A New Hope.
Okay.
Because the Jedi was scattered.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so...
So, we knew Yoda existed.
Right.
But again, much like the Rebellion, because somebody pointed this out, they were like, well, what are they going to do? Because the Rebellion has pretty much been decimated. And I'm like, there's some on the Outer Rim.
Right, yeah.
So, it's possible... I mean, if Luke found other... If there were other Jedi that Luke found, there's got to be a story somewhere between episode 3 and episode
4.
And 4. What happened to those who ran?
Mm.
And where did they end up? And how many of them did what Luke did, which is basically suppress that power so that no one could find them?
I'd be curious to hear that story because I really feel like most of them probably died. I think that what they're...
May have had families.
Or maybe. But what I feel like Disney is doing is making sure that most of them probably died at the end of episode 3 so that, yeah, there were people that were force sensitive and there were people that were probably that could have trained to become Jedi, but they didn't because basically there were Nazis running around telling you, we're going to kill you if you become a Jedi, so they kept it on the low. They were basically that little kid, you know, use force to pull the broom toward them, but they're not going to be like, let me use the force to, you know... destroy this world or anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't exhibiting strong force powers as a
because
as a projective thing.
Because the religion in and of itself had been had been.
No, no, no. You're talking about the religion. My thing is talking about this force in
no, itself. but the religion in and of itself was what drew a lot of them together in as a cohesive unit.
Yes, because, but the force existed outside the
religion. No, that's not. I'm not saying that. That's okay. Not the case. Mm-hmm. The case is that because again, I've always said this. The story that Obi-Wan Kenobi tells Luke Skywalker about Anakin. In my mind, whenever I heard that story, I always thought that Obi-Wan ran into Anakin in a bar.
Oh.
My in my head.
That he just met this dude?
Yeah. Like, because the way he says it, he goes, when I met your father, he was already an excellent pilot, but I was amazed at how strong the Force was.
So when I met your father, we was in Vegas. I'm opening up for Red Fox.
They were at the Speed Racer 5000. And he was like, wow, this guy can really... He's like, hey, I like your driving. What's your name? Anakin, I'm Obi-Wan. How you doing? Let's go get a beer.
Yeah.
And then they're sitting there and he's like, shh.
You know what? That would have been a much better story. That would have been a much better movie. It would have just been one movie. It wouldn't have been a trilogy.
No.
And that's the problem with the prequels, is that the studio was not going with just one movie that explains where Darth Vader came from. Mm-mm. So they had to stretch out, do all this, Jar Jar Binks, Weeza Free, you know, all that bullshit. They had to do three movies with Flash of Brilliance, bullshit, Flash of Brilliance, bullshit, and make these three movies.
Yeah.
With actually two of the best fight scenes in the franchise at the time.
At the time, yeah. Because this latest movie killed it.
Oh, yeah.
What, the lightsaber battle?
That throne room battle? Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. No, ooh, absolutely.
That was the best fight hands down.
And the end of Rogue One.
Yeah. I'm just saying lightsaber battle.
Yeah, that's all I'm talking about, too. That's all I'm talking about, too.
Yep.
That's all I mean. The Darth Maul fight and...
Yep.
Obi-Wan, Anakin, finally flipping. You know, best scenes in the franchise, but you could have made that one fucking movie. You could have made that one movie. Everybody would have gone home and been moist as hell. And that would have been that.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have maintained the respect. I mean, but at the end of it, two things about it. They're going to keep making these movies. We're still going to keep going.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the funny thing is, it's like we're all, you know, everybody's nitpicking and complaining about this, that, and the other thing that they didn't like. God, it's like, for me, it's like, back in the 70s, George Lucas had no fucking idea. I mean, he obviously believed in the project, and he wrote it out, ride or die, but he had no idea that he was going to have to come up with all this other shit after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, then he gets bought out. Like you got a successful waffle chain, so now Roscoe's buys you out. So and now they gotta come up with some shit, but then they gotta stay within certain parameters because you know they're Disney. It nobody saw this coming. So you know, so when people are complaining about, oh, this plot and this and that, that doesn't make sense because back in 85, you know, it's like, whoa, son. You kind of have to just take this shit for what it is.
We just have to enjoy them for what they are.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Can I just say one thing?
Do we have time for me to say one thing about this movie that
absolutely.
I really
enjoyed? And then the episode's over.
Okay, so one thing I really enjoyed about this movie is that it made me really appreciate the whole sacrifice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in the original movie. Because I've been one of those people that from day one, I was always like, I get that he sacrificed himself because he needed to give them time to leave. But I've always been like, that was a pointless sacrifice. I didn't really understand it. And now seeing the trials and tribulations that Luke Skywalker went, when he was like, you know what, I can't face Kylo Ren because I created him, and having all that guilt and all that baggage and everything, and understanding that he basically did exactly what Obi-Wan Kenobi did. Now I understand what Obi-Wan Kenobi did, that he was facing Darth Vader being like, you know what, I created you, I need to face you, and this needs to be the moment that I sacrifice myself for your child, because you know what, your kid is gonna fix it. This is going to be the person that fixed it. And now because of what I've seen with Luke Skywalker, I understand Obi-Wan Kenobi. And watching that movie, I'm like, okay, I no longer have any beef with what you just did. I get it.
In other words, Dad, I understand.
I understand now.
So, we got 15 seconds. We're going to close this out. And we're going to close down for a little bit. And we're actually going to get on the right Facebook page because yes. I accidentally put us on my Facebook page as opposed to the actual Beef Minus Shenanigans.
Perfect.
So, see you in a bit.
Bye. All right.